This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
We have a movie lineup which consists of things like Shrooms, Sleuth, Talk to Me, Darjeeling Limited, The Darjeeling Limited, I beg your pardon.
The Darjeeling Limited.
August Rush. We have a box office top 10, first of all.
Okay.
What?
No, I was just clearing my throat. I wasn't. Occasionally it is that it's the Freudian thing. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. I was just coughing just to clear my throat.
Someone has just come in and put the lights on in the room, which can only mean that we're being streamed live on the internet for no reason other than people might want to watch us.
If we're streaming live and if I'm looking slightly ragged around the eyes,
No, you're not.
I made the strange decision. Yes, I had combat lenses fitted, and And so you're only allowed to wear them for like 6 hours. So I did 3 hours of them yesterday and 6 hours of them, and I have to put my specs back on again. So I look like the specky old git again. But it is really odd.
What do you want lenses for? You have your image. People know what you look like.
I'll tell you what, it's because my left eye is so much different to my right eye that as my lens in my left eye gets stronger, I look more and more like the headmaster out of the Pink Floyd video for The Wall.
Now, that's a scary thing.
You know, with the guy with the one huge eye like that. That's what I'm starting to look like, a cyclops.
Brick Lane at number 10.
Which I liked. You know, I thought it was an admirable bash at a complex text. I think it starts slowly, and I think at the beginning you think, okay, this is going to be an uphill struggle. By the time you get to the end of it, it is a journey that has been well worth taking.
Lions for Lambs at 9.
Which I can't understand the sort of critical derision for at all. I think it's a good, solid piece of drama. Politics aside, I think it's a good, solid piece of drama. I do like Robert Redford. He constructs films, you know, like well-constructed pieces of furniture, and there's a certain degree of kind of British snobbery about, oh, it's a bunch of Americans talking about the war all over again. I think it's much more than that. I think when this moment has passed, you'll be able to see the film for what it is.
Shanty Om at 8.
You see, I let everyone down. I was going to go and see it, and I booked in the time to go and see it, but I didn't factor in the 3-hour running time. And I got there, and I turned out that by the time it ended, we'd be halfway through the next screening. So I'm afraid that I have failed to see it, because I just didn't think. I thought 2 hours, of course, that'll be fine. And it's 163 minutes. And it was only when I got there that I realised that with the trailers and everything, we'd be over 3 hours.
So you're still relying on...
Still relying on the audience's vote, so please let us know.
30 Days of Night is this week's number 7.
I like it. I don't like it as much as Hard Candy, but I think it's a good romping horror pick.
It's going to be better than Fred Claus.
Well, yeah, although, as we, because we're coming up to Christmas, let's remind ourselves once again that the greatest Christmas movie of all time, which doesn't even exist because it's In Ernest Saves Christmas, is the film that he's roped in to make called Christmas Slay, S-L-A-Y, tagline, he knows if you've been bad or good, and he's got an axe.
Which is worth repeating every year.
And along with walking around in women's underwear. And
when we do our live Christmas and New Year specials.
Yeah. Shall I do it again then?
We need to do that.
Okay.
We need to do that. But we might have to pre-record them anyway, just for fun.
I want somebody to actually make that movie.
Do you know, I need to apologise, because yesterday...
You apologised to me?
No, I'm not apologising to you, to Liz. Yesterday, right. I said, we had on the programme Ian Hislop and Jeremy Clarkson.
Oh, yeah.
And this turned out to be next week. So I just thought I might get an Ofcom fine or something for, deceiving the listener. So I'm just making it very clear. I wasn't deceiving. Well, I was, but it's next week.
What?
That's it. It's clear.
I don't understand what you just said. Yesterday you had on the programme people who aren't on until next week.
I think everyone else got it. It's only you that didn't.
Okay.
Elizabeth the Golden Age at 6.
Oh, those Pirates of the Caribbean moments that enabled Britain to stay as a regal territory not overrun by the Spanish. It's not history as we know it, Your Honour. It is not without a certain form of stupid fun, but it is stupid.
As advertised in a phone box near you, Good Luck Chuck is at number 5.
I mean, set yourself on fire rather than see it. Just do anything other than be in a cinema with that evil, repugnant piece of rubbish.
Stardust is this week's number 4.
Creaky British, fraying around the edges, but holding up very well. Good. I think it's a good, solid film. Although, funnily enough, somebody who I meet outside the school gates said that they took their young child to see it, and there was a moment in it in which the child was quite distressed. I mean, it's not completely without rough edges. It does have, it does have sharp moments in it. I think actually, it's genuine
sharp moments.
I was trying to think what the moment was that the child was distressed by. I'm just passing this on as a sort of public information thing.
Yes.
I have first-hand evidence of at least one child being upset by a moment in Stardust.
Right.
But I don't remember there being much in it that was quite... when the Michelle Pfeiffer character turns from old to young, and that kind of, there's some hobgoblin-y stuff in there, which could be quite scary.
And you're hanging out by the school gates because you're picking up...
my children from school.
You just said you're bumping into people outside the school gates.
Oh, I see.
Ratatouille at 3.
As ever. It's all right, but...
Beowulf at 2.
It's Ray Davies. I am Beowulf, and I am coming here to slay Grendel.
Ray Davies?
What did I say? Oh, no, it's not Ray Davies, the guy at the kids.
He is?
Ray Winston, coming here
God
to slay...
God blimey, it's Waterloo Sunset all over again.
The thing that nobody's done, and it's a shame they haven't done this in the publicity, because of the way that...
Come dancing.
Because of the way... That's what we did when I was just a lad. Because of the way in which the plot works out, is they ought to have Beowulf, I'm the daddy now, because in this version, he is...
I think that impression is getting better.
That's a scum gag, incidentally. You did recognise that, didn't you?
I had no idea what you were
talking
about.
I'm the Daddy Now is the most famous
line
from Scum.
I haven't seen Scum, though.
You've never seen Scum?
No.
You've never seen Scum?
No. Why would I watch that?
What did you do with your early life?
I had a life.
Did you sneak into the double bill of Scum and Quadrophenia? Brilliant.
I've seen Quadrophenia.
Brilliant poster. Brilliant poster, right? Scum and Quadrophenia. Quadrophenia, a way of life. Scum, a fact of life. That's an advertising tagline.
American Gangster is the UK's number one.
Ridley Scott back on form. Good for him.
That'll do. Let's talk about... Well, actually, we've got an interesting movie here because we were talking to Werner Herzog last week. And yep. If you want to, if you go to...
YouTube.
You can watch the whole thing.
Yes,
and,
you can.
It's got you and Werner Herzog.
And Werner.
And it's quite appropriate to be talking about this because it's this guy that you're talking about, Dieter Dengler, is a fairly heroic kind of guy.
Yes, although it's an interesting definition of heroism,
yeah,
obviously.
Well, we just had half an hour with two guys who have some fairly extraordinary stories to tell.
Absolutely.
And I mean, movies love stories like the two Justins that we had in. It's full of stories like that. I mean, those kind of heroes are in movies all over the place.
It is. Yeah, great movie heroism. Great movie heroism. It's the thing that, you know, mainstream cinema is absolutely based on who's the hero. So what are you going to do? You're going to send us in your greatest movie hero?
Well, not now that you've made it sound like that.
I think it's a very good idea. Right, it's okay. But here's what I don't mean to... Not just like kind of, you know, Tom Cruise
sound
in
like
Top Gun.
A great idea.
No, it is a great idea. Greatest moment... Greatest act of movie heroism. Greatest character, greatest act of movie heroism.
Act.
Okay, greatest single specific act of movie heroism. And can I start the ball rolling?
Go on.
Yes? Damien Karras throwing himself out the window at the end of The Exorcist. Sacrificing himself to save
the
girl.
I've gone off the idea.
No, there we go. You asked. There we go. Fine. Okay, greatest act of movie heroism. Let's start with that.
Okay. And while you're thinking, you can have a go at Rescue Dawn,
so
the aforementioned Werner Herzog film.
As you have said, the true story of Dieter Dengler, who already covered this to some extent he already covered it fairly fully in his documentary Little Dieter Needs to Fly. In case you don't know the story already, I'm sure you do because of the huge posters. The story is that he was a German-born US Navy pilot who flew over Laos in the 1960s, and his first mission was shot down, became a jungle prisoner of war, and according to Werner, is the only jungle prisoner of war ever to have escaped. Here is a clip with Christian Bale in the lead role.
Nice having met you.
What do you mean, Matt?
Well, my friends, you can run in here if you like, but I'm gonna scram this very night. This hut, it ain't no prison.
Scram. I like that. Listen, my friend, you cannot escape. If you try to escape, you'll screw up our release.
Look, without water, you won't survive more than 2 days out there. And without water, your tracks will be visible for even more. The jungle is the prison.
And indeed it is. And the rest of the movie is about how he escapes from that particular prison. Now, you know at the beginning that he escapes because it's, you know, that's the thing that everyone knows about Dieter Dengler. He was the prisoner who escaped. But on the journey, there is this extraordinary tale of, in inverted commas, heroism, in which this person, through sheer force of will and determinedness, gets himself out of this absolute hellhole and survives at the end. Now, a couple of interesting things about it. Of course, Christian Bale is great. Christian Bale is a great performer. He is one of those people who does the sort of physical changes enormously. I mean, you saw The Machinist, which I keep referring to as The Mechanic, because I can't say the word machinist, although I just did there, so that sort of proves that to be wrong. And he is somebody who really takes roles on and, you know, really comes to embody them, and he does a great performance here. More surprising is the fact that Steve Zahn, who is known for things like, you know, Daddy Daycare and Evil Woman, turns in a great performance as Dwayne, who is his sort of closest compadre in this breakout that they make. And then you heard in that clip there Jeremy Davis doing, of course, a very, very convincing impression of Charlie Manson, because he played, unless I'm severely mistaken, I think he played Manson in the recent TV movie of Helter Skelter, and he seems to still be playing that same one. You know, man, the thing is, what can you do, man? You know, it's just like the thing.
That's your Woody Allen impression.
No, that's not my Woody Allen impression. My Woody Allen went like this, you know.
That's exactly the same voice.
No, you see, Woody Allen breaking out of the... You can't do the jungle.
Same voice.
It's like creepy crawlies and like nature. For me, it's some bugs eating the little bugs eating big bugs.
Stop. Was that the same voice?
It was exactly the same.
Yeah,
it's not exactly the same. Have you ever seen Local Hero?
Charlie Manson, Woody Allen, it's the same person.
Okay, fine. Well, in that case, Jeremy Davis playing Woody Allen in a prisoner of war camp in Laos.
Thanks.
Okay, what can I say? There we are, moving swiftly on. Clearly, that's why those guys got the roles and I didn't. That's why I'm sitting here telling you about the virtue of the movie rather than out there playing in the jungle with Werner Herzog, who is, you know, casually getting shot while standing next to me. And incidentally, just to recap on this story once more, I know that every time Werner tells it, we get more and more cowardly, but I would just like to say, if somebody's shooting at you, I think getting out of the way is pretty much a prerequisite. It's nothing to do with being cowardly. It's to do with a sort of survival instinct.
It's common sense. Though we still haven't established whether they were in fact aiming at Werner.
No, but they did hit Werner, which I think is the empirical evidence, is it was Werner who took the bullet in the abdomen.
There must be very few, in fact, in the kind of world in which you are and we are. He must be about the only person who could take a bullet in the abdomen and just decide to carry on doing the interview.
Okay, and it is not a significant bullet. Anyway, back to the film itself. Obviously, the documentary has much more of what Herzog refers to as ecstatic truth. I mean, this is what Herzog is really interested in, ecstatic truth, moments which reveal the underlying truth of our existence. And you look at films like Grizzly Man, to which this does owe some kind of a debt, or films like Aguirre, Wrath of God, or Fitzcarraldo, or any of those things. They are all about the ecstatic moment when you realise that, you know, your place in the cosmos. And, of course, in Herzog's mind, the cosmos does consist of chaos, disharmony and murder, but it does so in a way which is sort of strangely spiritual. Now, there is much less of that in Rescue Dawn. Rescue Dawn is in many ways a pretty straightforward action movie. I mean, it's not an action movie, it's a tale of heroism in which somebody survives against all the odds, in which Christian Bale really appears to be going through this stuff, really doing the stuff that is required to survive and get him out of the jungle. What's surprising is that, considering how mainstream it is, it actually is still a Herzog movie. And I found it a very, very satisfying watch. It has a dopey ending, because at the end it feels the need to celebrate itself in a way which is kind of a little bit Top Gun and is not very Werner Herzog. And there is a little flight of fancy at the end, which I think most people will go, OK, we really could have lived without that. Perhaps that's the sop to say, well, you know, if I'm going to bring in a mainstream audience, they are going to need the cheering ending, which, I mean, obviously the ending is happy in that he lived, but it's not quite as it appears in the film. But there are great performances along the way. He films the jungle like nobody else. He's a really good stripped-down director. He understands, and God bless him for this, he understands that there is no worse crime than boring the audience and losing their attention. He doesn't make it into a great big sort of puff candy piece which just has no bearing in reality. It is fairly close to the proper story. And hats off to Steve Zahn for giving that real, you know, extraordinary performance. And I would really recommend it. It's a good, solid film. And if it brings Werner Herzog to a wider audience, then it has done its job.
And what does he think the world is actually about?
Chaos, disharmony, and murder.
Make it sound like drop-ins into Computer World by Kraftwerk.
Yes.
Spoken mechanically.
He said, but he's Bavarian. He said this brilliant thing when they're doing the thing about Grizzly Man. He said, at one moment, this bear, he comes very close to me, and I'm turning into Jonathan Ross doing German there. He came very close to me, and he walked up to me, and I said, well, what did you do? He said, I swore at it in Bavarian. And the bear thought, I'm not having you. That's it. And the bear walked away.
On movie heroism, Aaron on this, the career of Tom Cruise, I'd vote for, never has a man so vertically challenged overcome so many crises, threats, wars, and accidents. Similar tone on this one. Greatest heroic moment in cinema.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman pretending to be sexually attracted to each other
in Eyes Wide Shut.
Although they completely failed to make it believable, it was a heroic effort.
It was. Can we say hello to David Morrissey, hello to Jason Isaacs, and also, for 1 week only, hello to Daniel Kitson. And the reason I say this...
Hang on. Ken Branagh?
Yeah, but have we put him on the roster already?
Has he been in? I think we decided last week that he was to be included.
Hello, Ken Branagh. But can
he has to make a formal application.
When we say Ken Branagh, can we say Kenneth Branagh?
No, because that would irritate people after about, well, 1 week.
What, more than Ikea Knightley?
Yes.
You see, I really like him, but I find it impossible not to say Kenneth Branagh.
Well, you're just stupid.
Okay, there we go. Fine. But so here's the thing, because I had an email from David Cox, who's the guy responsible for the best, pithiest film review ever, which was of The Straight Story, the David Lynch film. He said Forrest Gump on a tractor, and that's it. That, for me, is the absolute, was it apotheosis? Is it Nadir? That's the other one, apotheosis. A great film review. He said he went to see award-winning Daniel Kitson at the Battersea Arts Centre, and apparently he began a routine by saying, listening to Mark Kermode's film reviews on his podcast, being pompous but brilliant as usual. And he said, I mean, Simon also got a name check, so for 1 week we should say hello to him. So, hello, Daniel Kitson.
So I also got a name check.
Yeah, but you didn't get called pompous. Yes, because you're not pompous. You're the brilliant bit, you
greatest
see.
Heroic movie moment, James Stewart saving the pharmacist. Or the apotheosis, as it's known in some parts of the world.
It's a Wonderful Life is such a fantastic film.
What else is new, Doctor?
Well, look, let's do two in sort of fairly quick succession because there's such a lot of stuff to cover this week. So Darjeeling Limited, which is the new movie by Wes Anderson. Story is three brothers, estranged brothers, get together to travel across India on a journey of self-discovery. Here's a clip.
I want to start by thank you both for being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're the two most important people in the world to me.
I've never said that before, but it's true.
And I want you both to know it. I love you, Peter.
Thank you.
I love you, Jack.
I love you, too.
How did it get to this? Why haven't we spoken in a year?
Let's make an agreement.
Okay. A, I want us to become brothers again like we used to be, and for us to find ourselves and bond with each other. Can we agree to that?
Okay. Yeah.
B, I want us to make this trip a spiritual journey where each of us seek the unknown and we learn about it. Can we agree to that?
Sure. I guess so.
C, I want us to be completely open and say yes to everything, even if it's shocking and painful. Can we agree to that?
So, Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, Jason Schwartzman, that's the deal. They're on the train. They go across India on a journey. And the whole thing, it being a Wes Anderson movie, is basically a sort of, you know, a satire, a send-up, a pastiche of that kind of, you know, American philosophical tourist thing. You know, let's go to all the spiritual sites. I'm going to do Owen Wilson. It's going to sound exactly like Werner Herzog. And incidentally, as we discovered during the news bulletin, exactly Sven. The same as Sven Göran Eriksson. All those impressions sound the same.
Foreigners, eh? They all sound the same.
Well, in my impressions, they do. They all sound vaguely Welsh. The problem with it is this. Wes Anderson is very good at he's kind of the king of what's referred to as American smart movies, this great sort of, you know, wave of smart intellectual academic style comedies. And when he's funny, he's very good. I mean, I do like the Royal Tenenbaums. We both laughed our way through The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Do you remember seeing that?
Yeah, you laughed more than I did. I enjoyed it, but I was laughing internally.
It's because I'm cleverer than you are, and it's to do with how smart you are as to how much you laugh. And I did laugh about twice as much. I'm about twice as clever as you are.
I think the jury's out
in the case of this film. Actually, the lack of laughs isn't because I'm thick, it's because the film isn't anything like as funny as it needs to be, and also because it suffers from a sort of fundamental problem, which is it's sort of satirizing that idea about Americans going on a, you know, a spiritual journey across India in which they are, you know, philosophical tourists, but it sort of falls into the trap of being exactly the thing that it is sending up. Halfway through the journey, the film sort of falls in love with the philosophical journey, and then it makes a completely ill-judged move into tragedy with a sudden unexpected death, and then it doesn't know how to get itself out of that particular hole, and it ends up becoming every bit as sort of sanctimonious as the characters that it's sending up. It's not totally without pleasures. I mean, there are several moments in it in which one chuckles wryly, but wryly chuckling is really not enough. You need acerbic drama. You need a laugh out loud, you know, moment. You need Bill Murray being that completely dour-faced character in the centre of The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. You need more than this. In the end, what this ends up being is sort of self-serving and slightly full of itself. And there's a little short film.
A bit pompous, maybe.
A bit pompous.
Pompous but brilliant?
Pompous. No, pompous but not brilliant. Oh. Me, pompous but brilliant.
Yes.
You, brilliant. Darjeeling Limited, pompous but not brilliant.
Right.
Okay, that's the trilogy and of pomposity made flesh.
And just explain how you chuckle acerbically, because chuckle is a warm thing. Inherently, yeah. A chuckle is a good thing.
Yeah, chuckle. Okay, chuckle.
But, if you chuckle
acerbically. Here we go, I'll do it. No, I'll do it. The magic of radio. Okay, fine. So a chuckle.
And that was patronising.
No, that was a chuckle.
That was a patronising chuckle.
No, a patronising chuckle is... acerbic
that's
chuckle.
That's a sneer.
An acerbic chuckle. It's not. That's a patronising chuckle. An acerbic chuckle is... There you go.
It's a James Bond baddie.
Well, there we go. James Bond baddies acerbically chuckle. Thank you very much. I'm really in the wrong profession. I should be a thesp.
It was.
Or, in the new digital world, I should be a synthesp.
That's you know, not a word.
Yes, it is. The new James Cameron movie features six synthespians. Anyway, back to the Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, yes, back to the Darjeeling Limited. This
is Journey is too long. It ends up being philosophical in the way that it's satirizing, which doesn't quite work. It's not as funny as it needs to be. And the best thing about it is there's a short film at the beginning called Hotel Chevalier, which features Jason Schwartzman and Rachel Portman. And that is funnier than the film itself. And the only thing to celebrate about it is I'm very pleased that short films are making a return. Short supporting features are a very, very good thing. And as in the case of Ratatouille, it's often the case that the 5-minute thing at the beginning does all the work that the feature then fails to do. Good short film, shame about the long film.
Couple of heroic moments.
Yeah.
This from Mark. When the Riders of Rohan ride out at the end of the Two Towers.
Yeah, but the whole of the Two Towers is a heroic moment.
Wrath of Khan, when Spock saves the Enterprise by messing with the dilithium crystals bare hands.
Which cannot take it anymore, Captain.
On movie heroism, Winter says, so Ray Liotta signing up for Wild Hogs. Of course, the bravery stupidity thing comes into play.
No, but there will have been a huge paycheck. That's not brave.
John Wilson, Cary Grant for turning down Professor Higgins in My Fair Lady.
Okay.
And Simon Nicol, who is sends us an email.
Yes.
Singer and guitarist with Fairport Convention.
Really?
Says, this is on the Pythiest Review, because you mentioned the Pythiest Review, which was
Forrest Gump on a tractor.
For
The Straight Story by David Lynch, courtesy of David Cox.
Now, you probably need to see this written down for this to work entirely, but Simon says, how about Dorothy Parker on I Am a Camera?
Yeah, I know what it is. You go ahead. Shall I do it or should you do it? It's very famous.
You do it.
Me no Leica.
See? L-E-I-C-A.
Yeah, exactly.
That's even pithier.
Yeah, and there's another one, isn't there? Psycho. There was one word review which was sicko.
No, that's not
But it's good. Not as good as Me No Leica. I Am a Camera, Me No Leica is very funny.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk. We've done Rescue Dawn and the Darjeeling Limited. What else is new?
Jesus Camp documentary.
I just say it was nice to have lead singers of any bands.
But particularly a Fairport Convention.
Yes. So Simon Nicol, we'll might add you to our list.
Who is the list now, right?
Well, I'm not sure.
Jason Isaacs.
He's in.
David Morrissey.
He's in.
Kenneth Branagh.
We'll have to have a discussion about that, but I think if Kenneth Branagh pronounced correctly,
yes,
because otherwise it's just going to get deeply, deeply irritating.
Okay,
he might be in.
Yes,
we'll have to have a meeting about that.
Yeah,
and maybe Simon Nicol, we could say hello to him. Yeah. Any other members of Fairport Convention who are listening?
Absolutely.
Dave Pegg's been on the programme, so he may well be listening.
He might well be listening.
Anyway, carry on.
So, Jesus Camp, documentary about evangelising for kids in the United States, which was nominated in the best documentary category earlier on this year, but of course was beaten by An Inconvenient Truth.
It's not bad.
It's rubbish. It's boring. Oh, the world's coming soon. Anyway, the story.
You're so right wing.
I'm not right wing. I mean, the worst thing about it is I sympathise with the politics of that thing. I just wish.
You're a neocon. Come
on. As we all know, the major cause of global warming at the moment is the hot air coming out of that man in that film. Anyway, fine. So this centres on Becky Fisher, who runs this sort of self-styled evangelising camp for young kids in America, and in which kids are basically encouraged to adopt a near hysterical approach to religion. Lots of waving their arms around, lots of shouting, lots of screaming, lots of babbling, incidentally, lots of what appears to be sort of talking in tongues.
Any acerbic chuckling?
No, there's no acerbic chuckling at all.
What would happen if you chuckled acerbically at Jesus Camp?
You'd be thrown out as a communist sympathiser. No, look, hang on, you're going to get me into difficult territory here, because I want to be even-handed about this, because the documentary obviously has a liberal sensibility, and what it is saying on one level, there is actually a character who's brought in to say as much, is that the rise of the evangelising Christian right in America is very much tied up with the rise of George Bush, is very much tied up with a bunch of politics, like, for example, the anti-abortion movement and all that sort of stuff. So that is the context in which all this takes place. On the surface, however, it is a documentary about somebody, taking their kids off for a religious school camp. Now, here's what's difficult. It's very, very easy to mock any form of evangelizing religion. It is very easy to do because it's mocking faith is a very, it's a very simple thing. It's easier to be cynical than it is. And obviously, as we know, I'm very entranced by the idea of faith, and I'm not willing to just say, oh, well, fine, the Christian right, let's all laugh at them. The problem with it is that what happens during the documentary is that even though you go in with an open mind thinking, what's wrong with teaching kids about spirituality? What's wrong with, teaching kids about religion? What's wrong with all those things. What happens is that as the movie progresses, they are the organisers of the camps are virtually from their own mouth condemned. Here is the moment at which, and I'm sure other people would have lost all patience with Becky Fisher, here is the moment at which I lost all patience with Becky Fisher, in which, in front of a room full of kids who are all completely histrionically worked up into a frenzy by her sermonising, this is what she decides is the main problem facing them at the moment.
Let me say something about Harry Potter. Warlocks are enemies of God. And I don't care what kind of hero they are, they're an enemy of God. And had it been in the Old Testament, Harry Potter would have been put to death. Amen. You don't make heroes out of warlocks.
Let me just be absolutely clear about
this. Was
she
on timpani then?
No, that's a musical accompaniment.
I had this vision of her with timpani between her legs, maybe, while she's...
Look, here's the thing. If Harry Potter had been around in the Old Testament, he wouldn't have been put to death. You know why? Because he's a fictional character. It's impossible to put a fictional character. You can hang the book, right? He's not real. Sorry, no point in railing at him. He's not a real character, and you clearly don't understand the difference between fiction and reality. Quite apart from that, as anybody who's aware of the Potter saga is concerned, actually, the Christ comparisons with Potter in the later parts of the saga are very, very clear, and anybody who thinks that Harry Potter is a bad and evil thing is a nutball, and I'm sorry, there we go. I personally...
Do you think most people will have left a parted company with her before that?
Yes, I do, because I think that I went in with a kind of, you know, a... Because, as I said, I have nothing against the idea of spirituality. The other thing which is interesting is, look, I have a lot of friends who are Catholics who hold views that I politically oppose completely, and views on abortion, views on the government, that sort of thing. But it doesn't mean that I don't have, you know, there aren't areas in which I can have common ground with them. I think just assuming that anybody who politically differs from you is, you know, is risible is obviously completely stupid. And obviously there are some ideas that are tied up with being a Catholic that are really... absolutely points of faith.
What sort of age kids are at this camp?
Oh, we're talking about, you know, young. We're talking about 10, 11. I mean, here's my main problem. I don't have any truck with the turning kids into hysterical babbling, you know, hey, blah, blah, blah.
Hands down for Pepsi.
I'm sorry, I can't be doing any of that with that stuff. I like old, traditional, sober, quiet, reflective, sitting in a Methodist church on, you know, wooden boards and not saying very much. Thank you very much. Sorry.
Sounds thrilling.
But that's it. I think that this whole kind of evangelizing thing is very, very close to hysteria. And I think in the course of this documentary, that's how it comes out. You come out the end of it thinking, I don't think for one minute that what's happening is that these people are being indoctrinated with a faith that's going to last them through their life. I think what's happening is that it's as hysterical as listening to a Britney Spears album and screaming at a concert, and it's going to end badly. And obviously the documentary in the end ties that up with a set of political values that I fundamentally oppose. What I'm trying to do is unpack my political prejudices and be open-minded about the idea of anything, you know, a documentary about faith. And in the end, I'm sorry, they all come out of it very badly.
We will await that debate, because what will be interesting to know is once people have seen that next week,
yes,
we can return to that and see where it goes. So Sleuth. Well, Sleuth is the one that's taking a lot of interest because of who's in it. So we have a big cast list here.
Well, it's not a big cast list.
We just had a text.
There's two people.
Just had a text from Richard Thompson.
Legendary from Richard Thompson.
Well, unfortunately, there's no way of checking that.
This is like MySpace, isn't it? You know,
he wants a mention as well. So it's for all past, present, and future members of Fairport Convention, you're in.
Yeah,
and we wish you well, and you're part of the team.
Okay.
And I think that's it. That's everyone done. But Maddie, consider
you've become so overwhelmed that you've actually been unable to speak,
choking with
all
excitement,
choked up.
Carry on.
Sleuth, which doesn't have a big cast at all. It's probably the smallest cast that it's possible to have outside of a one-man show. It is a people in it. It's a reimagining of the 1970s classic, which obviously started as a stage play, then was turned into a film. The original film starred, as you know, Laurence Olivier and Michael Caine. This reimagining takes the Anthony Schaffer original. It's re-scripted, rewritten by Harold Pinter. And we now have Jude Law in the role which was originally filled by Michael Caine. We have Michael Caine in the role that was originally filled by Laurence Olivier. We have Kenneth Branagh, who was once hailed as the new Olivier, as the director.
Very clever
already.
It all
ties up rather, rather neatly. The story, for what it's worth, is a house. In it is the Michael Caine character. The Jude Law character turns up. The Jude Law character is having an affair with Michael Caine's wife, and they are nominally there to discuss in a decent way the divorce proceedings. But as everyone will know, because it's a very, very famous story, in fact, the older character wants to play games with the younger character. And the game is he wants the younger character to pretend to break into his house. Here's a clip.
This is a frame-up.
A frame-up?
Yes. You want to destroy me. You're to see me in jail. You want me to do this and then shop me to the police.
No. If I shop you, then you'll shop me, and then we'll both end up in jail. No, I take a strictly moral position on all this. My wife is an adulteress. Actually, she should be stoned to death. Anyway, it's up to you. Make up your own mind.
You're asking me to trust you?
This is a simple proposition. You have an expensive woman and no money. If you want to keep the woman, steal the jewels.
Why don't you steal the jewels and give them to me?
Don't be a bloody fool. The burglary has got to be right. The house has got to be broken into.
Why don't you break into it?
For Christ's sake, I'm in it. How can I break into it? I live here.
Michael Caine doing the Michael Caine voice. Jude Law doing the Jude Law voice. Now, look, I don't know whether you've seen the papers today, but there have been some scathing reviews of Sleuth. Although, actually, when it played in European film festivals, it got some pretty good reviews. And apparently in America, it was sort of rather well-received. Shaffer's remake, Shaffer's The Wicker Man got remade by Neil LaBute last year, and it really, really made a total mess of it, and it's a real shame. And I would say right from the outset that this reimagining of Sleuth is in a whole different ballpark to what happened with The Wicker Man. That said, I have to say also from the outset that it doesn't work, and the reasons that it doesn't work are quite interesting. See, I think Kenneth Branagh is a very, very interesting filmmaker. I hated his work until Frankenstein, and Frankenstein was his first major flop, and when Frankenstein came out, I suddenly got him. Suddenly made sense, because Frankenstein is so full on and so full-blooded and so romping and so unabashed about what it is, and a lot of people threw their hands up. That was when the Ken backlash kind of started, but that was the moment in which I went, and then I reassessed the stuff from before and I realised that I had been mightily wrong.
Just
about
put you down as being difficult.
No, I've not been difficult.
When everyone liked him, you said, I don't like him, and then when everyone said, no, I don't like him, you said, oh, I like him.
No, it wasn't that. It was quite the, because I saw Frankenstein before I realised that anyone wouldn't like it. I saw Frankenstein quite early. I thought everyone's going to like it, and I was absolutely shocked when everyone didn't. Okay. Now, in the case of Sleuth, most of the problems for me are with the Pinter script. As everyone knows, the second act of Sleuth, I mean, you know, in the first act, there are the two guys together. In the second act, something else happens. But it's one of those things. It's like the mousetrap. Everyone kind of knows what happens, or at least a great proportion of the audience.
It's when all the other cast members arrive.
Exactly. All the other cast members, all that stuff turns up. So the script has to get through the second act, then invent a third act, which I have to say doesn't quite work. The other thing is it changes it from predominantly being about class to being about sex and about it's a very down and dirty script, very much in a way that's almost like kind of pastiche Pinter. The direction, I think, works on paper, but in practice it does look terribly stagey. It's all about the fact that the house is a material thing, and it can't protect you from the emotional things that are going on in the story. And it's about guys together, and I'm sitting there watching it thinking, I really like this filmmaker. I like those performances. Even Jude Law, I'm kind of slightly warming towards, because I've watched AI again recently, because Linda did a paper about it, this Spielberg conference. I always hate that film, and now I've seen it a couple of times, and every time I watch it now, I'm bursting into floods of tears. So it's a terrible thing.
Changing your mind on that as well.
I am. I mean, I'm going through a total midlife crisis, but the film does not work. It is an interesting attempt to reimagine Sleuth. It is, on paper, something which ought to be far more incendiary than it is on the screen. But in the end, I sat there thinking, why isn't this gelling? Why isn't this gelling? Kenneth Branagh has another film coming up, which we'll do next week, Magic Flute, which I really, really enjoyed. But the thing that joins the two of them together is that both the films are distinctly him. They are him attempting to do something. And you know what? When he fails on his own terms. I think he does fail very solidly with Sleuth, but he fails on his own terms.
And we'll do Magic Flute next week, when you'll notice that Jeremy Clarkson and Nina Hislop will be on the programme, as opposed to this particular episode.
Oh, is that what you were... I see.
Derek says, my favourite moment of movie heroism is actually awarded to Chris Columbus for deciding not to carry on directing the Harry Potter movies.
Very good. Well done.
Movie of the week?
Well, I think, you know, Rescue Dawn.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.